Hi, and welcome to Brown and Lit, a podcast where we talk shop with women of color in the book industry. We talk to writers, editors, publishers, booksellers, librarians. Seriously, any woman of color who works with words is game. We'll break down who they are, what they do, and what drives them to do it. And I'm your host, Princess Jones Curtis. Let's get into it.
Who are you and what do you do?
So, I'll start with my name. I'm Nassim. So now, I used to be a scientist. I'm a scientist for a very long time. And then in January, after the election, I decided that I was going to focus on my writing full time because I didn't feel the immediacy of my work. So now I am a freelance writer. Mm-hmm. I was working on, kind of different range of articles early in the year. I did some news writing about a month ago and had some mixed feelings about it, because of the organization I was working for. And now, I mean, I've been mostly working on fiction. Fiction is like my one true love. So that's what I've been doing. And I've been trying to I've been editing for years and years. So I do a little bit of that on the side. And that's a very basic summary of what I do. As for who I am, I guess that's like the topic of a book. As anybody, you could ask that for anybody, right? And they could be like, oh, I could write a book about who I am. The short of it is that I'm a child to Iranian immigrants. I was born and raised in Chicago. I currently live in Reno, which is very different from Chicago, but it's actually, I think, quite an underrated city. So I'm Persian, I'm Muslim, I am non-binary, so I'm trans and I'm queer as well. And in Reno, I reside with a wonderful Bolivian husband and our dog and two cats, although one of our cats is currently missing. So this is like a stressful time right now. I'm trying to find
That's like a very brief summary of me and what I do. Well, but how did you get here? Like, how did you decide, what sparked your interest in the written word? And how did you, so you just told me that you were a scientist, and then after the election, I'm assuming the election was what sparked you to start freelance writing. And, but had you always been someone interested in writing, or?
I've been writing since I was a kid. When I said like fiction is my one true love, like I started writing stories when I was a kid, as a lot of people do. My bless his heart, I love my dad. But he told me like it's not practical to do art in this world, and he's like, do writing on the side. Like I've also had a lifelong interest in science. My dad's an engineer, my mom's now a professor. At the time when I was a kid, she wasn't working. And my brother has classical autism. So, my interest in science sparked from a very young age of just like what's different in our brains. Mm-hmm. So with his advice, it's just like, do your stories on the side and, love doing that and work on that and try to publish them, but focus on science as a career. That way, you're able to like feed yourself and your family. Yeah. So I followed that and I loved science for a long time. I thought that, What I always have wanted to do is help people and make a difference, as a lot of people say. So, for me, and most importantly, I wanted to help families like mine and families who, and individuals and children with autism. And so I thought that science, the best way to do that would be through science, through understanding basically what's different in our brains, and that eventually kind of evolved into not just what's different in the brain of someone with autism, but, the brain of anybody with mental illness. Like as somebody who deals with mental illness, I found it very validating when I learned about, chemical imbalances in my brain. Like, I can't always blame myself for the fact that I'm depressed today or, whatever. So I stuck with science for a long time, but I've always kind of had this like, but I want to write, it was hard balancing, being able to balance my writing. And then I started, dabbling in freelancing, It's like in the middle end of 2015. But it's hard, you know, like trying to, you know, there's only so many personal essays you can sell. Eventually you have to, I think in order to be a really successful freelancer, you usually branch into reporting. And I wasn't a journalist for a reason. I don't think my storytelling works quite that way. So, you know, I kind of was like struggling with this, like, what do I do? You know, like I love writing, but I love science. And then as I was applying for PhD programs, I had this like really horrible realization that I hated what I was doing with science. And I was like, well, maybe I'll science write, which is a lot harder than it seems. You think after being a scientist for 8 years, you'd be able to, and writing for a long time, you'd be able to do science writing. It's a lot harder than it seems.
Yeah.
So, you know, I decided I would give my PhD program a chance. I was, you know, very luckily accepted into University of Pennsylvania's program, which is a great program, really supportive. But, you know, I was there and I was like, I just want to write. And then the election happened and I was like, okay, I love science. I love, you know, like what people do. I'm certainly interested in research. I just don't want to do it myself anymore. But literally my thought process was people are going to die. And if I can make a difference with, you know, if I can do some sort of activism with my work, then I have to do it because that might make an immediate difference in my same someone's life. And I can't sit around in the lab. So I left.
Okay. Now, since you were just saying, by the way, I completely understand how, like, so many of us have that conversation with our parents with, yes, we understand that you want to do art for a living, but we also want you to eat.
Right.
So please, because it comes from fear. And also,
right.
Like, my 6-year-old is obviously an artist. Like, he's obviously an artist. Just the way I can see it in him as he's on the porch making chalk paintings or as he's watercoloring, I can
That's
tell
adorable.
He's an artist. But I'm terrified. I was like, oh, no, you're an artist.
It's like,
you're never gonna have a house.
It's really, you know, it's so discouraging because people don't value art. You know, like I said, I'm in the U.S. and like people don't value art here. But at the same time, everybody is consuming art. You know, all the time. You know,
all
but
the
we don't put our dollars behind it. It's like
no,
damn it. Like we need to
no.
Like, we want to have. You know, we might want to have families. We might want to have pets who are part of it. Like, you know, we need money.
I was just looking at him the other day, and I'm trying really hard not to discourage him. But I was just looking at him and thinking, oh my God. You are going to be like a bill behind every month for the year.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And I'm going to have to let it happen because I can't let you not be what makes your heart sing. So I can totally understand that. It's really hard. I don't know if my husband's going to be able to be as on board with that as I'm going to be. I'm pretty sure he's going to have that talk. He's going to be like, listen, you got to eat. So please be a lawyer. But yeah, I totally get it. When you were younger and you were getting, and you were, maybe not even when you were younger, but is there a work or a piece or a book or anything that has really inspired you in your work or something that you always come back to because it's like one of the loves of your life? Is there something?
Yeah, there's a ton, actually. I think at the obvious, so I'm going to turn 26 in August, so I think anybody of my age is obviously going to say Harry Potter. You know, that was because I was reading it as it was coming out. It was a huge influence. But I think probably the biggest, you know, I don't know if I want to call it literary influence, but one love that I have is Tamara Pierce. She wrote this book, I think she wrote it in like the 70s, the story of this girl who wants to become a knight. And so she disguises herself as a boy. And it spawned this series of this world called Tortall, and it's like a medieval fantasy. Mm-hmm. But the story of Alana, of this girl who wants to be a knight in an age where women don't become knights anymore, has always I think I read it first when I was 10 or 11, and it's always been with me. I have like a tattoo on my arm for her, and I think part of it is that I have I've never had, until I discovered the term non-binary, I'd never had a good term for my gender. And I always, you know, I was always trans. Like, I always felt like I'm not quite a woman. I'm not quite a girl. And I don't quite want to be a boy, but I don't know how to reconcile these feelings. But seeing this girl who wouldn't let her gender stop her do what she wanted to do, and who kind of straddles this line between woman and man while she's like growing up was really influential for me. But it also, you know, like, fantasy has always been my genre. Part of that because of Harry Potter, part of that is Lord of the Rings. Like, Lord of the Rings is one of my dad's favorite book series, and so like, yeah. I grew up reading that. And so I love what fantasy can offer the world, not just the world in the book, but I mean like the wider world and the boundaries that you can break that you can't necessarily break in realistic fiction, in terms of social norms, for instance. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like coming back, like there's definitely like coming back as an adult, like there are plenty of problematic things in the Alana books.
Well, sure.
There's some, yeah, you know, like unfortunately that's hard to avoid, but like I've come back to this book like over and over again, and it's been like hugely important to me.
Okay. So, I'm going to link to all the, like, to the books in the show notes so that other people can find them. I find that, like, some of my white friends always ask me, you know, what can I be reading that's not, you know, written by white men or also about white men or,
yeah.
You know, and I sometimes say, I don't know, because we're all reading the same thing. So I'm hoping that by linking to the books that you guys mentioned in this podcast interview, that I give a resource to people that says, okay, well, this inspired this person. And yeah. I want to check that out too. And, you know, just give some people some other options besides, okay, what's, you know, front row center in your bookstore on Amazon.
Right.
Because those things, they all the same things.
Yeah, no, I know. It's so true. Like, I was thinking about, so Stephen King is one of my favorite authors, and I'm like, God damn it. Like, why do my favorite authors have to be like a straight white man?
He's so good.
I know. He is really good, you know, like, and I know something like I wish as a child. So like, I read plenty of Persian authors, you know, like Persian stories and growing up, you know, but I like regret that I didn't have a stronger grasp of like authors of color. Like, I'm just now reading, like after all these years, just now reading Octavia Butler, and like, how is it that now reading Octavia Butler, who is like,
listen, I'm just reading her now too.
If you're interested in science fiction, like, she is the author to read. She like puts people of color front and center in her work, and she's like very unapologetic about it. And like, you know, like, I'm excited that there's so many new authors who are doing that too, and who are probably because like of all the like diversity and literature movements are like encouraged to center those sort of identities in their work. But like, goddamn, like, that's something I didn't think about when I was a kid and didn't think about for years.
And
recently.
Also think about how we get influenced by what we're going to read. We're influenced by what the New York Times tells us, what the libraries tell us. I read a lot of books, but there's only so many hours in a day. And sometimes we're going to miss things. And I'm not going to give back the hours I spent reading It, which I adore. It still scares me to this day.
I can't wait till the movie comes out.
Right after I read that book, I was staying at my mom's house, and my brother was having a baby shower. And for some reason, my mother thought it would just be, like,
I want
these baby shower balloons. And I woke up, and there were balloons in my room, and I freaked out. I could not handle it. And I just said, you have to take these out. And so the fact that first of all, I wasn't seeing it. I read it. I read a book, and it had that effect on me, means it was a great book.
Yes.
Don't feel sorry about that.
No, we actually just, my husband and I read it aloud to each other just recently. It's one of his favorite books. And it's just like, you know, like, goddamn Stephen King. I gotta say, like, he is, if you're gonna have like one white male author that's in your bookshelf, it better be him, because he really knows what he's doing.
And he definitely knows what he's doing. And he has some great ideas about the craft of writing. And I recommend people to read On Writing as well, because he's
so good.
He gets a lot of stuff right, and he's really honest. And I appreciate that in all work. If you're honest about things, I mean, yeah, he's honest about his drug use. He's honest about his limitations. And I think that the books that really stick with us are the ones that tell us the truth in some way, and we can resonate. If that resonates with us, that is what sticks with us, the ones that are the truth tellers.
I absolutely agree with that. Yeah, I think that as a reader, and I think you learn, you know, you're trying to learn this as a writer, but as a reader, you can tell when something is honest and when something speaks to a truth, even if it's not your truth.
Yeah.
You know, that I agree. Those are the books that stick with you.
Mm-hmm. So all of my interviews are with women, and you're my first non-binary writer of color. And I'm hoping to get some more, but fortunately you responded to my call in the group, or otherwise I might not. Like, I'm really lucky that like, when I posted the post, I thought, like, maybe five people would be, like, interested. And I'm so lucky that everyone was like, yes, let's do it. So first of all, thank you.
Thank you. I'm so excited that you're showcasing women of color and non-binary people of color. There's so many of us that want our voices to be heard. So
But I'm asking everyone, how has being a person of color affected your work? And has it been something that's been ongoing or something that's changed over time?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've been thinking about this a lot recently. When I was a kid, I tended to write, because, you know, I wrote fiction then. I wrote stories with myself in them. So kind of inadvertently, I was putting people of color in my work. I based a lot of my stories on kind of like the Persian, like, literature that my parents would tell me, and as well as whatever I was reading. And so you know, I kind of did that inadvertently, but then I feel like as I was in, like, high school and college, that kind of almost fell by the wayside. Like, I forgot that why I started writing was because I wanted to see myself in books. So then, you know, in the last couple years, as I've been thinking about inclusion in literature, I've been like, oh, you know, like, why is it that there's so many white people in books? And why is it that everyone who picks up a book wants to see themselves in it in some way?
Sure.
Like, you know, so it's really now that this is a very conscious effort that I'm putting people of color in my book. And I'm learning, you know, like, I could write like a thousand books where the main protagonist or, like, you know, a bunch of people are Persian. Like, I could, but, you know, there's like, I'm trying to be more inclusive and, like, trying to get that right. I think that's what scares people away from writing characters of color, is getting it right. And it's like, well, you know, if you care, if you care and you do your research, you can do it right. You know, it's just like, you have to be careful, because you don't want to misrepresent what it means to be that other experience when you don't have it. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, like, I'm going to write something about a Persian character, and someone else is going to be like, hey, I'm Persian. And that's, like, not at all what it's like. And I recognize that.
Right.
It's tricky.
We have to give some people some slack about things like that. I want more people of color in your books, and I'm okay if the person that you are writing is not exactly like me, because not everybody's exactly like me. And the same for ourselves. One of the reasons in most of my books, I don't have white male characters, because not because I don't know any or don't experience any, but because I'm always worried, especially in first person, I'm always worried I'm not getting it right. Like, what if they have, like, some secret white guy stuff that I don't know about, and I'm not going to get in there because I don't go to the meeting. And so that's why I give some people slack about things when they include diverse characters, but maybe they're not the main character, because they're like, how am I supposed to do that?
Right.
I get it. I just want us all to try harder.
Right. Yeah. And there are, you know, there are resources out there, right? Like, I absolutely think that it's important for writers of color to represent people who are of their background in their work. Like, I completely see the, like, I think it's so necessary, for example, for, like, Black authors to write Black characters, and for, if you see, like, a Black character on the cover of a book, especially for it to be from a Black author. Like, I totally get that, especially in the States where race is the most like crucial and tense thing here. But you know, there are resources, you know, you just have to like go online. I took a class a couple of months ago called Writing the Other, which is led by Nishi Straw and Tempest Bradford. And it's amazing. I mean, it's just like, you know, they go through, you know, how do you write about race? How do you write about disability? How do you write about gender? How do you write about sexuality? And, you know, the whole point is do your research. Like, here are some resources that we can give you, and here are ways to be thoughtful in your writing. But, you know, don't be just keep trying. And get sensitivity readers, you know, like there's a reason that's one really great way to support writers of color is to be like, okay, I've written a book that has this character. I'm not of this background. I want to make sure I got it right. And, you know, like, yeah, most authors aren't rich, but it's worth it. It's worth it if you get good representation out there. If it makes a difference to one person picking up your book and saying like, oh my God, like, this is, like, I've been looking for this character in some way or another, I think that's worth it.
Yeah. And also, another great thing to do is to make sure that, I mean, not everybody's in a writing group, but if you can be in a writing group and you have, and you make sure it's a diverse one where it's full of men and women and people of all shapes and sizes and walks of life and colors, you're going to get more perspectives on what you're writing.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying you have to take everybody's perspective as gospel, but the fact that someone says, hey, you know, this doesn't seem realistic, and let me tell you why, because in my experience, blah, 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 blah. Like, that's useful. That's useful.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Yeah, and it's hard to find good writing groups, but, like, thank God for the internet. You know, there's like, the internet has brought a lot of bad stuff, but it's also brought some good stuff. And one of them is that you can find a writing community across like international waters even.
Right. Right. You don't even have to be in the same time zone. Like, you guys could be across the world and still be helping each other write better stuff.
Right.
You know,
If
someone were looking at your life and they said, look, Nassim has got it down pat, like, that's what I want.
And I don't know why.
it never looks good from the inside, but from the outside, there's somebody watching you right now and says, oh man, I wish I could be that. I wish I could do that type of work. I wish that I had followed that path. What advice would you give them?
That's a really good question, because I kind of have a really roundabout path. I guess a couple of things. I guess the first thing would be to have a support system. I was lucky in that my parents, especially now, I mean, like, you know, a lot of us have like conflicts with our parents growing up because teenagerhood. But, you know, like, having a good support system is, I think, crucial. And especially like if you have a kind of meandering path like I did, or if you have a really sudden career change in the midst of, you know, like, I was on my way towards becoming a career scientist and becoming a good one. Like, I'm really proud of the work I did as a scientist, and I dropped and switched that. And I disappointed a lot of mentors and my parents, too. And I think having a good support system is absolutely crucial. Another thing is, I think everyone should go to therapy at least once in their life. I've been in therapy for a long time. I mean, I don't really use it so much anymore, but therapy was absolutely crucial for me to also get to where I am and to admit that I could want what I wanted. And I could live a life in which I was serving other people, and, you know, and especially serving people like my brother, but I could still make that my life, and it would be a life worth living. So I remembering, you know, like keeping that in mind, like, you can, if you want to make a difference somehow, or if you are a service oriented person, you can do that and still love your life for yourself. I think a lot of us, especially people who are born female, and I think especially people of color, feel like we can't live for ourselves, or, you know, we're not allowed to want the things that we want. And I think if I had just acknowledged from the beginning, like, you know what, like, I love science, but I want to be a writer, I think things would have been a little easier emotionally. Like, don't discount, like, what you're emotionally and mentally going through, because you know, like you have this life, right? Regardless of what you know, like I have a religious background. Like regardless of what you believe happens after, like you are currently in this life. So make it your own. And that was something that like I heard a lot and I was just like, I am making it my own, whatever. And it's just like, you know, like thank God that I'm only now 25 and I'm realizing these things because I've talked with so many people who are much older. And I think, you know, sometimes I think like even my parents, like my dad, like might have been happier if he had pursued something else. Or, you know, like my mom discovered, like she changed her career once my brother was diagnosed. And, you know, she says stuff like, well, I wish I had done more science stuff like you had it. And I think living with regrets is just not worth it.
Yeah.
Even those things are hard. Like, but if you love something, like, goddamn, you'll make it work.
And I love that you just said that about therapy. So many people are afraid of therapy, but therapy is awesome because it's just you talking about yourself and
right.
centering things around yourself, which in the real world you shouldn't do, right? You shouldn't
right.
center about yourself in the real world. But in therapy, the therapist is constantly saying, well, how do you feel about that?
Right.
And I'm like, well, I'm so glad you asked because I have lots of questions. And
yeah.
so I don't think people should be scared of that. I think I think that we should be working on our inner selves as much as we're willing to go to the gym or we're willing to
yeah.
you know, get our hair dyed or pick out the right
Absolutely.
Outfit.
Absolutely.
It's so, in fact, I think it's more important because it's going to stick with you forever and hair
right.
dyeing will last so long, you know?
So, yeah, yeah, I completely agree. And you know, like, I always think about it, like when someone's like, oh, I don't know if I should go to therapy. It's like, listen, you're literally paying somebody to listen to your problems. Like,
yes.
you know, like
your
that,
friends don't have to get mad at you all the time anymore.
Right.
You actually have a place to put this stuff instead
right.
of, you know.
And something, you know, something that I'm therapy has helped me a lot with is like boundary setting. And, you know, like that's something I feel like as you get older, especially like as a writer, if you do any, like I've written personal essays, but even in your fiction or anything you write, you know, like people come at you from all sides. Like you're never going to make everybody happy. There's always going to be somebody who's going to come at you. But setting boundaries, like learning what your boundaries are and how to set those with people you both know in your life. And then, you know, the internet, like we, you know, like I said, the internet has brought terrible things as well as great things. I think that can really make or break you as a writer or as anybody who puts work into this world.
Mm.
So yeah, go to therapy, people. Highly recommend it.
Do it, guys. Go to therapy. So what are you working on right now? Or specifically, like, what can I expect to see from you in the next couple of years? What should we be on the lookout for?
Yeah, oh, gosh, that's a good question. So I always have some manuscripts that I've been working on. One manuscript, I really hope it'll be out in a couple of years. I've been shipping around for an agent for a while. It's basically a book about mental illness and growing up in mental illness. It's a fiction. And it's a family story. It's the story of this boy who basically grows up in this really like strange boarding school for orphans with mental illness and realizing like, hey, my life, like this is not quite as normal as I kept thinking it was. So hopefully, you know, like, God, I would really want to get that on the shelves today. Like I want that soon. So hopefully that, but, you know, because it's people, I don't know, people have, some agents have had some trouble with him being an unreliable narrator, which is kind of the point. But
yeah.
hopefully, yeah,
That's the whole point. It's
tricky, you know, and like, I'm very grateful that I've gotten so many eyes on it and so many people have liked it. So hopefully I'm working on a fantasy right now, a base, which at the core of it is about two friends helping a third friend come to terms with the death of their brother.
Mm.
But as you know, it's like rotating first and second person. And it's kind of a weird, it's like set in a world in which like, basically, like instead of Christianity ruling the world, like Muslims rule the world at some point, but it's like a very subtle sort of change, and like everyone's a person of color. And so, like, I would love it's tentatively called Ghosts That We Knew. And so, like, I would love to get that on the shelves. And I've written another manuscript that it needs a lot of work, but the conceit of the world was that the colonizers failed. And it's like this fantasy world in which the gods are using, like, manipulating humans, and humans are starting to fight back. But it needs so much work. I don't know when that would ever be ready for publication.
I mean, it sounds amazing. They all sound like really interesting.
Yeah.
And what I like about it is I can't think of another book that I'd be like, oh, that's just like so and so.
Hopefully.
That's nice.
Yeah. So, you know, that's kind of like what I've been working on. I mean, I probably will get some articles out here and there, but, as much as I admitted to myself that I wanted to write, I then had to admit to myself that what I wanted to write was fiction. And
right.
So I put a lot of like freelancing on the back burner in order to work on my fiction.
Crossing fingers. And what are you reading these days? Is there anything you would recommend to the listeners?
I mentioned before that I just started reading Octavia Butler. I'm reading Parable of the Sower, which is really good. And I feel like feels especially relevant because it's set in not even 20 years in our today's future where like water is a really scarce commodity. And it's scary because I'm reading this and I'm like, this is actually something that could happen. Like this seems like a bit too close to home. I definitely am like really enjoying that one. And then I just started reading Stephen King. I just started reading Dark Tower because the movie is coming out soon. It's like one of my dad's favorite books, and we want to go see the movie together. And I'm excited because Idris Elba is in the movie, so I want to see this right now.
Idris Elba.
So, I know he's so good.
And I always have to read the book before I see a movie if I see the movie.
Oh, me too.
Because you can't go back. I feel like once you've seen the movie, you've already, those characters, what they look like, sound like, and move like, become in your head. So when you're reading the book, you're seeing those characters as opposed to what you might have seen the first time.
Yeah. Yeah. Sometimes that's good for me because I'm like the jerk in the back of the theater screaming that Harry's eyes are green. Sometimes it's good for me because then I'm like, oh, like this is how it's different as opposed to like, this is wrong. I hate you. You ruined everything.
I'm like that. In fact, I've never seen the Harry Potter movies because terrified that they are going to ruin them. And everyone says they're great. So I don't want to, anybody listening to this, I don't want you to be like, the Harry Potter movies are amazing. They probably are. But I'm afraid that I'm going to catch something really small and it's going to bug me entire movie.
It will. I mean, like, I loved them. You know, the first two movies I think are the best, which some people will disagree. But no, there definitely are plenty of things that I'm like, this is wrong. And it's hard for me to let that. I know plenty of people are, my husband lets it go. He's just like, it's a different medium. I'm like, I can't do it.
Yeah, it's really hard. And also, Queen Sugar is really big right now, that adaptation of someone's own. And I read the book. I wasn't a big fan of the book, but I decided to watch the series, and the series takes a lot of liberties. Like, they change whole characters, whether you should sympathize with them or not. And so I'm watching it, and I'm like, yeah, he's doing great now, but you know what you don't know is that he did this and this and this. And I know some secret about these characters. Like, the book still exists, and everyone else just doesn't know. And I'm just like, so everyone's in love with one of the characters. His name is Ralph Angel. And I am just like, guys, he's the worst. You don't
fall for it.
When the show's not on, he's off doing drugs. You don't want to. So basically, don't watch TV with me because I'm going to ruin it for you. So the last question I'm going to ask you is there anything else that we have not, that you want to make sure listeners know about yourself, your work, or your experiences?
I want people to know that the thing that I care about is centering marginalized voices.
Okay.
And so that's, I think I've always wanted to do that, but never known the words for it. And that's what I want to do. And if I can find one person who's marginalized in some way, who reads my work and goes, oh my God, thank you. Like that's it. Like that's my goal as a writer.
Okay.
So I hope that there are lots of really great writers who are starting to center marginalized voices, and I hope that the trend continues.
Okay.
And that was this week's show. Make sure you check out the show notes at brownandlit.com for links to the things we talked about today. Also, you can follow us at Brown and Lit on Twitter and Instagram. And if you'd like to get in contact, email us at hello@brownandlit.com. Thank you, and we'll see you next week.